Broadcasting worldwide from an undisclosed location high up on the Rocky Mountains, this is Truth Frequency Radio. To reach Chris and Cherie from inside of the United States, dial area code 512-904-8014. International callers, please dial 1-866-841-1065. And now, here are your hosts, Chris and Cherie G.
From the gateway to the Rockies, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the country and around the world. This is Chris Geo, and you are tapped into the Truth Frequency. Joining me, as always, is my lovely chipmunk twin flame and co-host, Cherie.
Good evening, everyone.
And it is December 3rd, 2011. Wow. I mean, the time has just flown by.
It's almost 2012.
I know. This year just disappeared. Uh-huh. And it seems like every show that we do, especially when we have a really fascinating guest, which we have some great guests for you today or tonight or this morning, wherever you are. It seems like the time just completely flies by. So, I don't know, maybe there's something weird going on. But tonight we're going to talk about Planet X and Nibiru and a few of the possibilities on what we might see in the forthcoming months. We've got a roundtable that's going to be joining us the second, third, and fourth hour. We will be joined by John DiNardo and Sheldon Day of lightofdayradio.com. Talk about Planet X, Nibiru, Earth changes, and get another perspective on what might be going on. We've had several Planet X people on in the past, and I like to put all the information together, then take away what resonates with me. And I think that's what the audience should do as well. And ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back with Sheldon Day, John DiNardo, lightofdayradio.com to talk about Planet X and Nibiru. We'll be right back. The lightofdayradioshow.com, ladies and gentlemen, is the website. Check it out, because fascinating information about Planet X, Nibiru. John DiNardo is our guest, and we'll be joined by Sheldon Day here in a few minutes. But John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. It's a pleasure being with you.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, at first I didn't recognize the name, but now that I look at the picture, I know exactly who you are. Excellent. Very, yeah, definitely. So we've seen so much going on, so many rumors and rumors of catastrophes, but we've seen a lot of catastrophes as well. And there's so many different theories right now that reptilian bases are being nuked, that HARP is causing all of this, and that there's this Planet X coming. And I tend to go with the latter because it doesn't make sense. If it was just happening on Earth, then maybe we can point it to some kind of terrestrial something that's happening here on Earth. But it's happening to the Sun. It's happening to Saturn, to Mars, so on and so forth. So the only thing that I can point to is something is coming. What would you say?
I'll try to give you the most compelling evidence. And this is, I'm reading from an article. I actually photocopied this article with high clarity from my public library. And I did send it out on the internet, and I'll show you how you can actually see this article that's posted as a JPEG file. It's the New York Times, Sunday, January 30th, 1983. Now, this is a lengthy article, but it's extremely informative. And you could stop me if it gets to be too long. It's about 5 minutes. Clues get warm in the search for Planet X. And it has a picture of the infrared astronomical satellite in the article, with technicians working on it prior to its launch back in January of 1983. Okay, this article titled Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X by John Noble Wilford, New York Times. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Now, they're talking about gravitational tugging at the outer planets. Continuing on, evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of this mysterious gravitational force.
John, I don't mean to cut you off, but a couple of the listeners are sending comments that they can't hear you too well. Is there any way that you can turn up the phone or anything? I don't have any control over that, unfortunately, on my end.
I thought I was speaking pretty loudly. Hold on a second.
We'll see if we can get that sorted out for you guys. Unfortunately, on the system here, I don't
Wait a minute. There is a control. I think that's going to sound louder to you. Does it not?
A little bit, yes. Can you crank it up a little more?
No, I don't know if this makes your voice louder or my voice louder, but I'll just try to talk closer into the phone, and you tell me if I'm talking too loud. I'll just try to talk as loud as I can. I'm trying not to wake up everybody in the house here.
No problem at all. Actually, I'm looking at the meter here, and it looks like you did peak up a lot when you did that, so hopefully that will be good. Guys, if you have any, if you can't hear it, send us more comments, because, of course, we can't hear the stream, and we'll do whatever we can to get that straightened out for you, but please continue.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think I should start over again and make it real quick. This is New York Times, Sunday, January 30th, 1983. Title, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X. New York Times, John Noble Wilford is the author. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Evidence assembled in recent years has led to several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of this mysterious force. And see, incidentally, what they did was they sent out this space probe called Pioneer 10 and in the direction of where their calculations showed that there was a tugging force way at the outer bounds of our solar system. And they were hoping that this gravitational massive body with this massive gravitational pull would actually pull the space probe traveling in its travel out of its trajectory to indicate that there is indeed a gravitational pull on it. And that's what they found that there was. So they've confirmed gravitationally that this object is there. They felt it, even though they couldn't see it. Now I'm going to continue on. They are also hoping that a satellite-borne telescope launched last week will detect heat signatures from this planet or whatever it is out there. The Infrared Astronomical Satellite, IRAS, was boosted into a 560-mile high polar orbit Tuesday night from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. And I'm going to read on and on. They're saying, I'm going to skip a few lines here to abbreviate this. They are saying this is a joint venture by the United States, Britain, and the Netherlands. And over the next 6 months, they say the telescope is expected to conduct a wide-ranging survey of nearly all the sky, detecting sources not of ordinary light, but of infrared radiation, which is invisible to the human eye and largely absorbed by the atmosphere. Scientists thus hope that the new telescope will chart thousands of infrared emitting objects that have gone undetected, stars, interstellar clouds, asteroids, and with any luck, it will detect an object that is gravitationally pulling at Uranus and Neptune. And they go on to say, I'm going to skip a little bit, but they go on to say that they have noticed this planet's gravitational pull on the outer planets, causing the outer planets to sort of jog or be plucked out of their orbits at one particular point in their rotation, the outer planets of Uranus and Neptune. And they've noticed this ever since the early 1800s. So here we have, for 200 years, we've seen the gravitational effects of this unseen massive body. And I'll read right from the article now, picking up at the article. In the article, as astronomers observed Uranus, noting irregularities in its orbital path, many speculated that they were witnessing the gravitational pull of an unknown planet. So began the first planetary search based on astronomers' predictions, which ended in the 1840s with the discovery of Neptune, almost simultaneously by English, French, and German astronomers. But Neptune was not massive enough to account entirely for the orbital behavior of Uranus. Indeed, Neptune itself seemed to be affected by a still more remote planet. In the late 19th century, two American astronomers, William Pickering and Percival Lowell, predicted the size and approximate location of this trans-Neptunian body, which Lowell called Planet X. So what they're saying is in the late 19th century, this object has been named Planet X officially by the astronomical community. So it is not a science fiction concoction of some over-imaginative person. It's not a sci-fi hoax like many people. You know, people who are ignorant of the subject consider the term Planet X as some kind of a cheap sci-fi term.
Right,
that
right.
Has no meaning at all. It's only because they're ignorant of the subject. It doesn't mean that they're stupid. It's just that they have no knowledge and they're prejudiced. Many people are prejudiced when they hear a term like that because they're used to seeing a lot of cheap science fiction movies. But the name Planet X has indeed been attributed to this body for 130 years. And it goes on to say, here's the best part of the article, and we're getting close to the end of it.
Oh, we've got plenty of time. Don't feel rushed at all.
Okay. Great, because I usually rush when I get on these shows. Recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., have confirmed the orbital perturbation. Perturbation is a pulling of the planet. Have confirmed the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune, which Dr. Thomas Van Flandern, an astronomer at the observatory, he just passed away recently, says. Dr. Van Vlander says this could be explained by, quote, a single undiscovered planet, unquote. He and colleague Dr. Robert Harrington, incidentally, I and many others believe that Dr. Harrington was murdered because he was trying to bring this evidence to the public. Van Vlandern and his colleague, Dr. Robert Harrington, calculate that the 10th planet should be 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth and have a highly elliptical orbit that takes it some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto. Hardly next door, but this is a very important quote here. Hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of the Sun. Still, it's within the gravitational influence of the Sun. And we'll get back to that later, that very telling statement later on, to show you that this proves that it's coming in. Continuing on, some astronomers have reacted cautiously to this 10 planet predictions, etc., and just read on and on. I'll skip a little bit here. But according to Dr. Ray Reynolds of the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California, other astronomers, quote, are so sure of this 10th planet they think there's nothing left but to name it, unquote. At a scientific meeting last summer, 10th planet partisans tend to prevail.
Wow.
A little bit more.
I mean, not only did the New York Times cover this, but the Washington Post. You can even go back to the 30s. You can go back to the 30s to popular science and find talk of Planet X.
That's very good that you've looked into that. That's really important. I mean, that's what really dispels any kind of cynicism, skepticism about this subject. Continuing on here, defenders of the 10th planet parried any skeptical suggestions. Material, they say material falling into the gravity, wait, I'm getting on, they're talking about whether or not it's a black hole. They say, no, it's not a black hole. A less massive star, okay, it's not a neutron star either. Some people thought it would be a neutron star. But, quote, more credence, in other words, there's an overwhelming body of belief among the scientists and astronomers that to the hypothesis that a brown dwarf star accounts for this mysterious gravitational tugging force. This brown dwarf is the informal name astronomers give to celestial bodies that were not massive enough for their thermonuclear furnaces to ignite. Perhaps like the huge planet Jupiter, they just missed being self-illuminating stars. Most stars are paired. This is an important comment, too. Most stars are paired. In other words, we have a distant twin sun. Our sun has a distant twin sun that is dead, and this is what scientists have found. Most stars are paired, so it is not unreasonable to suggest that our sun has a dim companion. Moreover, a brown dwarf in a neighborhood might not reflect enough light to be seen far away, said Dr. John Anderson of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Its gravitational forces, however, should produce energy detectable by the infrared astronomical satellite. So they're saying, yeah, you can't see it because it doesn't emit visible light. It emits primarily infrared light. So here you have the New York Times. And now you alluded to the Washington Post article. I photocopied that article also. That's a landmark article. So these I have these in high clarity. It's not a transcript. It's the actual front page article from the Washington Post. The infrared astronomical satellite, this is my comment, was launched in January of 1983, and it was heralded by this New York Times article, which I just read. Well, exactly 11 months later, December 30th, 1983, the infrared astronomical satellite had achieved its mission. It had discovered this unknown gravitationally pulling body, and it appeared with a great fanfare on the front page of the Washington Post, December 30th, 1983, and I have that article. This is hard evidence, these two articles, January 30th and December 30th, New York Times and Washington Post are hard evidence that this thing exists. Quote, front page, Washington Post, title is Possibly as Large as Jupiter, a Mystery Heavenly Body Has Been Discovered, by Thomas O'Toole, Washington Post staff writer. Quote, a heavenly body, possibly as large as the giant planet Jupiter, and possibly so close to Earth that it would be part of this solar system, has been found in the direction of the constellation Orion by an orbiting telescope aboard the U.S. infrared astronomical satellite. So mysterious is the object that astronomers do not know if it is a planet, a giant comet, a nearby protostar that never got hot enough to become a star, a distant galaxy so young that it is still in the process of forming its first stars, or a galaxy so shrouded in dust that none of the light cast by its stars ever gets through. Quote, all I can tell you is that we don't know what it is, unquote, Dr. Jerry Neugebauer, IRAS chief scientist for California's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and director of the Palomar Observatory for the California Institute of Technology, said in an interview. The most fascinating explanation of this mystery body, which is so cold that it casts no light and has never been seen by optical telescopes on Earth or in space, is that it is a giant gaseous planet as large as Jupiter and as close to Earth as 50 billion miles. While that may seem like a great distance in Earthbound terms, it is a stone's throw in cosmological terms, so close, in fact, that it would be the nearest heavenly body to Earth beyond the outermost planet, Pluto. Quote, if it is really that close, it would be a part of our solar system, unquote, said Dr. James Hauck of Cornell University's Center for Radiophysics. And I'll just continue reading right there. So there you have the evidence that this thing was discovered. Now you have to ask yourself, this is the most fantastic, most important, earth-shattering, pardon the pun, discovery in astronomy ever in the history of mankind. Why would this subject be totally suppressed from documents, publicized documents in 1983 until now? Why would it be totally suppressed?
Because they don't want you to know what's coming.
That's the only reason why. There's no other reason why it would be. Now, people could say, if it's not coming in, then we should be talking about it. We could talk about it. It would be a great scientific marvel.
Right. Absolutely. Now, I mean, this would be the biggest discovery.
It is. It's the greatest discovery in the history of mankind. In fact, you can say that this is greater than anything else in science, greater than the discovery of principles of Einstein and Sir Isaac Newton. And, you know, because it affects the entire Earth, all the other great discoveries that have been thoroughly publicized over the years have really been a great blessing to humankind, such as gravity, electricity, and magnetism, all these other principles. But here we have something that is going to literally destroy the entire Earth and leave only but a few remnants of biological life left on Earth. So you know why it's been suppressed, because it could be devastating. Dr. Harrington was working with NASA, and after they had discovered it, it seems that for some reason some of the information was falsified to make it look like to cloud and obscure the real facts so that people would not be too alarmed. They said it was coming from the constellation of Orion, but really it's really coming from a different location, a slightly different location. And Dr. Harrington stated in the New York Times that it was two to five times more massive than Earth. Well, it turns out that Dr. Harrington was not telling the truth, and he did it for an altruistic reason. He didn't want to alarm the public, and I think he was cautioned about, you know, with the idea that, hey, look, do not make this thing seem too alarming to the public. We have to try to diminish its threat in the eyes of the public. So say that it's 2 to 5 times the size of Earth. However, we can see that that's a lie by looking at that very same New York Times article. In that article, which I just read, it says that they believe it's a brown dwarf star. Well, a brown dwarf star is not 2 to 5 times the mass of planet Earth. The puniest brown dwarf star, if you want to really be conservative in estimating its mass, would be about close to 1,000 Earth masses. You see, Jupiter is, Jupiter is explained, its mass is described as 318 Earth masses. That's Jupiter. It's incredibly great, large. Now, this thing, they say, possibly as large as Jupiter. That's what they said in the Washington Post. Well, again, they're downplaying the threat of it. It's not possibly as large as Jupiter. It's larger than Jupiter. And now we've got more evidence because it's coming so much closer. And here it is, the year 2011, and information has been leaking out from the scientific community that it's something like about, 1.5 to 1.8 times the volume of Jupiter, which would make it much more massive when you do the calculations and the calculation of the volume.
John, hold that thought. We've got a break coming up. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. TruthFrequencyRadio.com. We'll get Sheldon on the line as well. Oh, John.
Yes, hi.
You know what? I had my mic muted. None of that went out. So welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. TruthFrequencyRadio.com. If you want to go to the subscriber stream at TruthFrequencyRadio.com or listen on the non-subscriber stream, I went ahead and activated those for this particular show, and we've got the levels balanced, so you'll be able to hear a whole lot better. Of course, we're speaking with John DiNardo. A few technical difficulties, but it doesn't matter because this information is so vital that it needs to get out there. And, John, before the break, I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Before the break, we started talking about the cover-up of this brown dwarf and this planet and this downplaying. You know, we saw Elenin come through, and they pointed to Elenin as the brown dwarf coming, and YU-55 as well. It was supposed to hit the Earth and so on and so forth. But I think what it comes down to is they don't want to panic on their hands because most people can't handle this kind of information.
And also, they would lose control of the public. Right now, they keep the public under their thumb by fear. They keep people paying their taxes through fear. When people see this thing in the sky and realize that there's a power far greater than the New World Order that is over the people, then the people will then disobey these power-hungry parasites whom we call the New World Order. And that these greedy men, they're desperately afraid of that. In fact, their lives would be threatened, wouldn't it, if the people lost their fear of them. They plan to go underground. And so they're not going to tell us about it, trying to create as many diversions as possible. And one way to do it is to have reports, put out so many different reports of celestial bodies being discovered in the skies that after a while people become jaded and desensitized and very skeptical. And when the real thing comes, people say, oh, yeah, don't bother me with that. I've heard so many stories about comets. I'm just sick of hearing it. And that's what they're planning to do. They do the same thing with other issues. You know, you've seen it in the past, where they talk about the detrimental effects of certain foods or certain drugs or whatever. And then they'll come out with another report saying, oh, this drug is really good, or this food is good, and this food is bad. No, it's good. No, it's bad. They want to get the people so disgusted that they'll just give up. And that's exactly what their plan is. You know, disinformation is a highly polished art, and government knows just how to do it. They have lots of people in think tanks figuring out these plans of disinformation. But this is the greatest threat they've got to cover up, and that's why they're working hard at trying to disillusion the public. Let me get a read to you from a book. I'll tell you the name of the book in a second, because people remember the name after they've heard the quotations if they're very impressed with what they hear. I'm going to read from this book. In the mid-1990s, an American geologist, general engineer, and structural engineer by the name of Philip Schneider, who allegedly quit his job building secret military bases for the U.S. government, gave over 30 lectures in 1995. The very next year, he suffered a highly suspicious death in January of 1996, and his story is presented in this book to illustrate a very realistic view of what shelters could exist today. Before delving into his alleged description of a globally interconnected, get this, he actually described a globally interconnected system of subterranean and submarine arcs, the survival arcs, in existence today. Let's first become acquainted with the late Philip Schneider. As a geologist and engineer, he had top government clearances. Consequently, he visited many foreign countries and briefed their government leaders during his 17-year tenure with the U.S. government. And my comment is, because this man had spoken so much about this subject to foreign governments, he figured, hey, look, I'm used to talking to the top men who are keeping this vital information secret. It's about time I started speaking to the people. And that's why I think his rationale was because he was a man of conscience. Continuing on, for 11 of those years, he worked at Groom Lake in the Nellis Air Force Base area of Nevada, north of Las Vegas. He co-invented shape charge blasting and rock deflagration technologies and was the son of a former Nazi U-boat commander. After World War II, his father helped to build a Nautilus, the world's first nuclear-powered submarine. The Maser laser rock deflagration devices that Schneider invented are used to create underground tunnels and complexes by melting and agatizing rock. Used in tunnel boring systems, they can bore a 28-foot wide by 28-foot high shaft at a rate of 7 miles per day. To clear the tunnel of haulage that the device does not agatize, workers would bore vertical holes to one side of the lateral shaft and use hoists. This would reduce the chance of rock dust getting into the machinery or the laborer's lungs or masks. Also, they would bore ventilation holes for fresh air. By working together, machines could accomplish this 7-mile-a-day rate while minimizing pollution. And it goes on to say that he had, Schneider warned us that a New World Order has been steadily dismantling national governments and merging them into the United Nations, which will eventually morph into a one world government. Look what they did to Gaddafi. They tear down his recalcitrant nation. And other people, they've been doing it to the Arabic nations, going in and just taking over these countries by force.
Right.
Those who serve this secretive cabal are told they're working towards the noble purpose of putting an end to war. After 17 years of faithful service, Schneider resigned after reaching the belief that a much darker purpose is at hand and that it is controlled by off-world races that routinely violate their agreements. Well, that's something very interesting. I didn't want to get into that. But anyway, I'll show you tell you the basis that this book talks about. According to Philip Schneider, as of December 1995, this was a long time ago, there were 131 underground bases worldwide. 131. The subterranean variants are known in the black operations community as deep underground military bases, or DUMBs. The submarine versions, which exist beyond the continental shelf, are designated DUMB 2 bases. Schneider focused his lectures on the subterranean DUMB variant and offered the following facts. 1. USA subterranean locations. Deep underground military bases are typically located on government-owned land. For example, there are 9 deep underground military bases that are situated under Nellis Air Force Base, north of Las Vegas. Average size and cost? Well, at 4.5 cubic miles. That's 4.5 miles by 4.5 miles by 4.5 miles in three-dimensional space. At a cost of $17 to $31 billion each. That's our tax money, our hard-earned money for these people to protect themselves and not us. Largest base size and cost. The largest is located in Sweden. It is 30 cubic miles. 30 miles by 30 miles. Or, I'm sorry, it would be three times, whatever, three numbers multiplied together to give you 30. I'm sorry. At a cost of $2 trillion. It took 5 years to build and was wholly underwritten by the United Nations. That's our tax money. And, well, going on and on. I won't give you any more details here, but we have abundant evidence that they have the deep underground military bases. Governor Jesse Ventura actually filmed them for his television, True TV program, titled A Conspiracy Theory. And that episode was titled Apocalypse 2012. You can go to YouTube, type in Jesse Ventura, Apocalypse 2012, or anything, any combination of those words, and look for Episode 6, Part 6, because they broke down this 45-minute broadcast into 6 parts, and the 6th part is the most revealing.
John, we've got another break coming up. We'll bring Sheldon on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're tuning in to the Oracle stream, you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com and tune into the special broadcast stream. We've got the level balance. We've got the levels balanced on that stream. So we'll be right back, truthfrequencyradio.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with John DiNardo, and Sheldon Day will be joining us here in a minute, thelightofdayradio.com. And if you're having trouble hearing the guest, tune in at truthfrequencyradio.com. Go to the special broadcast stream. We've got that up and running as well, and we've got all the levels balanced there. But let's go to Sheldon. And Sheldon, welcome to the show.
Hello, Chris. Can you hear me?
Yes. Actually, you're coming in just fine. So I think it's just a problem with John's line, but it's okay. We're going to get this information out regardless. So I don't know if you've had a chance to hear what we've been talking about. I think you have. So do you want to just go ahead and comment?
Oh, yeah. I've been listening and recording it. I used to have this similar problem with John when I brought him on my own radio shows that I used to do. His volume level was always low. I think somebody has John's phone monitored there. But, you know,
yeah, it must be.
Well, yeah, so I'm Sheldon Day. I live in Tucson. I'm a former talk show host. My friend John DiNardo, he's a former high school physics teacher, by the way. That is true what John was saying about Phil Schneider. Back in late 1995, Phil also answered a question from an audience at a lecture he gave about a brown dwarf star coming into the solar system. He called it Nemesis at the time, but I just wanted to throw that in. The evidence for the existence of Planet X is rampant. It's all over the place. It's depicted as a winged globe on the Chrysler car logo. I mean, NASA had an internal project tracking it. You can go to the reports of. There's a report online you can look at. There was a science fiction channel show that aired February of this year called SmackDown, and right in the middle of the wrestling show, they threw in Planet X. They just pulled it out of the middle of nowhere. I mean, if you do your research, you'll find out that this topic's embedded in our society.
Oh, well, you're absolutely right. You know, we were in New Mexico and in Santa Fe, and we were just at a random bus stop driving by, waiting at a red light. And what do we see? We see a big mural of Planet X. It had a huge pyramid with an all-seeing eye rising up out of the clouds, and it had the mountains in the background.
You know, I think that's done to ridicule the subject. I've seen that happen with the David Letterman show way back in 2002 when the subject was really getting to be hot. And what they did was they made a big spoof about it on David Letterman. I found out from a friend. I hadn't seen it. I wish I would have taped it. But I did get the internet story on it. I had it. So I know it's really true that they made a big joke out of it. And that's what they're trying to do with this, putting it on WWF wrestling. So people hear the name and they think, oh, this is a silly, oh, I've heard of Planet X, that silly thing that's on WWF. So when it becomes an object of ridicule, people don't believe it.
Right, right.
There you go. There's more evidence that they are afraid that if this information getting out, the fact that they're ridiculing it, they're obscuring it with multitudes of reports about objects in the skies, everywhere, coming in. This object was sighted, that object was sighted. And after a while, they know the people will get jaded and desensitized, and they won't want to hear it anymore. That's what their purpose is.
That's what it seems like, definitely. And then I'm sorry, go ahead, Sheree.
It seemed like Elenin was like Heaven's Gate on steroids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's why me and Chris, we kind of backed off the whole Elenin Nibiru thing for a while, because it seemed like people were trying to push us in a certain direction as far as like believing that it was made of hydrogen cyanide and that it had a spaceship that was under intelligent control. And I mean, none of this ever felt true. And so it's like,
you know, that's an interesting point that you raised, Sheree. Sheldon, let me get your take on this. What do you think about this idea that there's benevolent extraterrestrials out looking for our best interest, and they're going to stop this thing and make sure that nothing bad happens to us?
Well, I personally investigated the UFO phenomena for about 15 or 17 years, and I finally came to the conclusion, and I can thank Bill Cooper a lot for this. That man really woke me up. The vast majority of this UFO stuff is just disinformation. I think it's designed to what I think is going to happen is these earth changes are going to get so bad at some point that people are going to have to be calmed down and have reassurance that everything's going to be okay, so they're going to throw in a fake extraterrestrial invasion type scenario or something. And they've even been conditioning us on the TV shows like The Event that aired on NBC. Well, here are these good aliens, they're living on an island up in Alaska. And that may help calm the people down by telling us, oh, these good ETs are here now, we don't have nothing to worry about anymore.
Hey, that's a good point. I never thought about that. That's exactly what they would do. Because to calm people down when they become hysterical out of fear, they'll try to tell us that there's some good, benevolent aliens, a greater power that's going to protect us. Of course, if it's, we know it's a part of the evil plan. We won't get into that too much. I mean, I don't want to get into it personally. I think later on when people get a better grasp of this subject, but I'm always afraid that if we start talking about, again, it's not us that are talking about aliens. It's the power elite that are putting it out in the movies. Everywhere you turn, you've got these demons and devils and devil worship and aliens.
Vampires, aliens, wolfmen.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're saying, we're trying to be rational, whereas they're trying to interject all of this paranormal stuff, and there's a lot to it. I mean, I do believe that there are supernatural powers. There's a supernatural power that we all know as God.
Well, John,
religion a person may have, but still, they're trying to take it to a ridiculous length. Yes, Sheldon.
Well, I was going to say, John forgot to mention the reason. The elites, we think the reason the elites are going underground is because of the solar scorching that'll be coming soon. You see, as Planet X gets deeper into the solar system, it's going to cause the sun to start flaring out at some point. And they even the ruling power elites have even indicated in the motion picture movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage, it shows the solar scorching at the end of the movie, and I tend to think that they're really worried about that kind of stuff. You know, earlier in that movie, it shows an oil spill out in the Gulf of Mexico. Well, that movie was put out like a year before the actual oil spill even happened in the Gulf, so maybe that oil spill is like a precursor event to the, what's going to happen before the sun starts lashing out.
No, I was going to say, I've seen that, and I've seen a lot of predictive programming. You can look at the movie 2012, and they had huge tsunamis and earthquakes almost in the same place that Japan did.
They said, and they even said, there's been two earthquakes off the coast of Japan, sir. And they're like, oh, no, the shifting has begun. And if you look at the scientific evidence, it did shift the earth off its axis.
Well, that's another thing. Ancient Mesopotamian texts say that there's going to be massive inundation of flooding we're going to be witnessing before this object gets here. And that's exactly what we've been seeing around the world.
Right. John might elaborate. Yeah, Zechariah Sitchin quotes that in his landmark book, The 12th Planet. What he says, I think it's around page 244, he says that the ancient historians tell us that when this object came in the past, and that's a whole new whole new line of information that we have not introduced to your audience yet. This information, this object comes in and every periodically. When this object came in the past, ancient historians said that one of the first signs was massive flooding, torrential rains and floods, and that's exactly what we've been having all over the world. I've been following the Weather Channel, and every nation, Ireland just got flooded. The entire nation of Pakistan, people tend to forget it, but the entire
Spain.
Nation of
Bangkok was underwater as well.
Spain.
The mainstream media just isn't reporting on this.
I just read that they're evacuating that area over there.
Are they? I didn't know it was that extensive. But not only are we seeing flooding, but we're seeing the birds falling out of the sky. We're seeing the fish washing up dead. There's so many signs. If it was just one thing, then you can kind of dismiss it. But you put everything together, and it paints an entirely new picture. But you know what, guys? We've got a break coming up, unfortunately. TruthFrequencyRadio.com, ladies and gentlemen, is our website. Our guests, Sheldon Day, John DiNardo, thelightofdayradio.com. And for those of you listening on TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we will keep the discussion going throughout the break. So we will be right back to all of the Oracle listeners. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Truth Frequency Overdrive. We do have the stream at TruthFrequencyRadio.com, non-subscriber and subscriber stream going if you want to tune in there. And it is commercial-free. Well, you know, we're still taking commercial breaks, but we're talking over the commercial breaks. We are speaking with John DiNardo and John DiNardo. Okay, I thought I mispronounced that for a second. And Sheldon Day, thelightofdayradio.com, talking about Planet X, Nibiru, Earth changes, and catastrophes. And guys, you know, John, I do want to say this. There definitely has been a cover-up. Not only that, but we've seen trillions of dollars disappearing. And like you mentioned earlier, the underground bunkers. So they are definitely gearing up for something. Do you think it could be something as simple as the satellites going out? Because that's something a lot of people ignore. Huge solar flares hitting all of the satellites and just wiping us back to the Stone Age.
Yes, that's predicted to happen with these solar emissions of electrified particles, protons and electrons, being blasted out by the sun and striking Earth. Not only will the satellites be damaged, but also the power grids will be taken out. You know, and there are ways we can protect ourselves from a lot of these events. And the first thing we have to do, you know, when we start talking about this, people start to flee mentally and emotionally. They start to flee in fear. They don't want to hear it. And it gets scary, and they would rather just turn to a movie and take their minds off of it. But we want people to know that there is hope, and that they have to stay with the subject, because if a person buries their head in the sand, they make themselves a target.
Can I interject, Chris?
Go ahead. Sure.
Well, I had a thought. I didn't want it to disappear, but Chris mentioned subtle effects like satellites dropping out of orbit. Well, there's other subtle effects that are rampant everywhere. We have sinkholes popping up all over the place. We have train derailments. We have rogue waves out in the ocean. I mean, these are all other subtle indicators that, that the Earth is starting to break up from the inbound passage of this brown dwarf.
Right, and Earth is being affected magnetically by incoming comets. But, you know, we have to stop right here, I think, and give people hope so that they don't become terrified. Our purpose is to give them direction. Now, there's spiritual hope, which is the most important. People who have not been accustomed to it, to the reality of God, we have to start becoming accustomed to that reality and know that God, just even if you do not study the God of the Bible, the God of love, it doesn't have to be Christianity. It could be other religions that believe that God is love. And God, that spirit, power, created all things. And He loves us. He or that spirit loves us. Because look at the wonderful creation that He's given us. Look at the human body, how fabulous it is. Just the human hand alone is able to do a million different things from, you know, from drive nails.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Oracle stream, but we'll keep it going on the Truth Frequency.
Not because I'm the first one to discover this. It's just that God is the one to give it to me, and God will give you thoughts and direction to it. He promises throughout the Bible to supernaturally protect us. Yeah, because He does. He says, I'm going to destroy this world. In various places in the Bible, He says, I'm going to cause the earth to wobble to and fro like a drunkard. Well, that's what we call, we see the wobbling of, as a result of an object gravitationally pulling on our planet Earth and causing it to wobble in its rotation, which is exactly what has been happening to the outer planets, like the outer planet Neptune. So you see this object, this huge brown dwarf star, has been coming in toward the sun. Now again, why would it be coming into the sun? People might say, who haven't really thought this out, might say, well, it's just a passing body. Why would it come in here? There's very little chance that it would intrude into our solar system. But gravity works. Just as an asteroid or a meteor caught in Earth's gravitational field up in the upper atmosphere would be sucked in by Earth's gravitational pull and would be accelerated to the ground to come crashing to the ground as a meteorite. Very in like manner, an object far away would be gravitationally pulled in by the sun's gravitational field. And the sun is huge. Its mass is defined as 1/3 of a million Earth masses. That's 330,000 Earth masses. That's how big the sun is, whereas Planet X, as I said before, is conservatively estimated to be a brown dwarf star, about maybe 1,000 Earth masses. So the sun is about 330 times more massive than this brown dwarf star. So the brown dwarf star is like an asteroid or meteor that's being sucked in toward the Earth. But now it's not a meteor sucked into the Earth. It's a brown dwarf star sucked into the sun. And it's coming in. But on its way to the sun, where does it have to pass? It has to cut through the orbital paths of all these revolving planets. It's like a racetrack. You know, you see the circular racetracks with one track within another track. They're all concentric, and none of the runners is a threat to the other runner because they're all in their own tracks, and their paths are not crossing. Okay, and now imagine a bystander outside of these circular tracks. He comes crashing through, comes dashing straight through the circular tracks toward the center of these tracks. He would be a menace, wouldn't he? Because he could crash into some of the runners. Well, this object is not in a circular rotation in an orderly orbit. Rather, it's coming through, and it's called the planet of the crossing. Nibiru means, in ancient Sumerian, planet of the crossing. And it crosses the paths of all the inner planets. So that's what we've got to look forward to. Now, it's not going to crash into the sun because it has not crashed into the sun in its previous orbits. Incidentally, every orbital period is 36 and a half centuries. Remember that time frame, 36 and a half centuries ago, it came in. 36 and a half centuries before that, ago, it came in. And we have evidence. The Israelites in 1650 B.C. and a great flood of Noah's Day in 5300 B.C. Do the arithmetic. That's 3,600, 36 and a half centuries plus another 36 and a half centuries. Yes, Sheldon.
Well, I wanted to add that, Planet X does not necessarily have to hit Earth. It's called a term that Professor James McCanney came up with. It's called action at a distance, and this is something they
right.
don't...
Right, he didn't come up with that. You're absolutely right, Sheldon. Action at a distance. But he didn't come up with that. That term has been used in physics for centuries. You'll find it in physics textbooks.
But, okay, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah,
the other thing I wanted to...
It's a valid term. It's just like magnetism. You know, you have a tabletop, your kitchen table. You put lay a very powerful magnet at the center of that table, and then put a ball bearing a little bit, you know, not too far away from that magnet. You know it'll happen, don't you? The ball bearing will begin to roll toward the magnet, and it'll begin to accelerate until it shoots right into the magnet when it gets close enough. That's action at a distance, where a force can be exerted on an object without actually physically touching it. And that's what happens. That's what this object does. But it's not it's both magnetic. It has magnetic fields, which will affect Earth's magnetic field and Earth's mostly molten iron core. But it also has a gravitational pull. And that's what the Bible is talking about in Isaiah chapter 24. It says, God says, I will cause the earth to reel to and fro like a drunkard and to nod like a hammock. That's the actual Hebrew translation. The English translation is incorrect. They say, God says, I will cause the earth to be removed like a cottage. That is a mistranslation. I checked out the Hebrew definite Hebrew original words, and it's God says, I will cause the earth to reel to and fro like a drunkard or wobble and cause it to nod like a hammock. Now, if you take a model globe of the earth and put it into the bed of a hammock and slowly swing that hammock, what's going to happen to the North Pole? And when you pull the hammock back, the North Pole will rotate vertically toward the equator, and the equator will rotate vertically toward the South Pole. So there you go. It's nodding as if it were in the bed of a hammock, and that's exactly what the Hebrew word says. How much more graphic can you get?
Well, John, let me jump in for a second and say a couple of the listeners are sending comments saying that, how do you know this is going to happen? Nothing's going to happen. This is all fear-mongering, so on and so forth.
Gravity works. That's my answer.
Well, I would say that it is happening. People are waiting for some event to happen, but I guess they don't realize that this is a crescendo of events. This is a culmination of all of these earthquakes and catastrophes and so on and so forth.
First of all,
can I interject with that?
Go ahead.
I'd like to interject by stating one of John Moore's classified sources say that the continuity of government contingency planning had until January 1st of 2010 to finalize preparations with their underground shelters, and any time after that is just borrowed time that we're lucky to be alive. What I think is happening is God is actually slowing this object down as it comes in, because he's a very loving God and is just willing to give humanity more time to prepare.
Well, that's what it seems to me, because I've been doing my Planet X radio broadcast ever since 2004. And I figured I'll be doing this broadcast for a couple more years and then Planet X will come in. Well, I've been doing it now for 7.5 years. God has delayed it. But, you know, the proof is there. The John Moore, his former Green Beret, he's got contacts that show him that they have maps of what the U.S. government says the United States is going to look like after this object comes in. We're going to have inundation of land masses, they say, parts of California. In fact, if you look at the psychics' maps, these are psychics that were being given visions from a supernatural power. Okay, and we know who that supernatural power is, because God, you know, tells the Hopi Indians what's going to happen. God loves everyone on earth. And he's given people of all nationalities, ethnicities, and religions this information in dreams and visions. I never used to believe in that. I'm a scientist by nature. I never believed in anything metaphysical. But now I see the evidence with Edgar Cayce predicting these while he was in a hypnotic trance. He didn't even know what he was saying, and he was predicting a polar shift that would occur. And, well, Gordon Michael Scallion is another one, but he drew a map of what the United States would look like. That is, the West Coast would be inundated. There would be nothing but a series of islands in what is now California. The West Coast would be Boulder, Colorado. That's your new West Coast. This is in the U.S. government maps that John Moore has obtained.
I just found out Aero Electronics and Coleman Camping, they're moving out to Denver now. So we have a lot of people, outfits moving out to Denver. And
Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, the NSA, CIA. The CIA. Well, here's something else I'd like to share with the audience. I personally uncovered a NASA contract October 31st that was put out October 31st, 2007, whereby NASA awarded this contract to a subsidiary of Prudential to start relocating their own people. And then just a few months ago, the NASA administrator, Charles Bolden, was warning his employees to, you know, be ready for natural disasters because they could be coming. And
That's right, I saw that.
Over all these years, they've been hauling tons and tons of stuff up to the International Space Station. And, you know, I got to thinking, well, maybe that's... what they've actually been doing is the space station's been modified to become an orbiting weapons platform, and what they're doing is they're firing at all these rocks that are coming in that are going to accompany Planet X, because, you know, it just doesn't make sense. Why are they so worried about spending all that money building that thing and, you know, astronauts just floating around up there? There's got to be something bigger going on there with that.
It's been a big falsification program for the last few years, as Sheldon says. I've been catching these little reports that are buried way back in the back pages of the newspaper or just casually mentioned real quickly without any explanation on the news on television, like the Weather Channel. Several reports where they say like 15 tons, and then another instance where 30 tons of equipment were launched up to the International Space Station. And get this is so phony, for the purpose of repairs. I mean, you don't send that much equipment up for repairs. And at the same time now, they've done repairs, but yet now they're vacating the space station, but they're really not vacating. The whole thing is full of lies. They're actually, Shelton, I believe, is absolutely correct. They're making a weapons platform because we are being inundated or being approached by so many objects that are coming in. Remember, this thing is like a huge vacuum cleaner in space, this brown dwarf star. It's like a magnet. It attracts so many asteroids, meteors, comets, and it looks like a huge, it's sort of analogous to a beehive being coming in toward our sun that is swarming with bees all around it. And these bees are actually comets and meteors. And they've got to shoot them down because they're going to be sucked into Earth's gravitational field, obviously.
Well, I'd like to add if people go to Lucas's website, there are four asteroids that hit the Earth last year, and the mainstream media buried all that. These things are coming in. They're just being widely reported.
You know what, Sheldon? You're breaking up really bad. I'm gonna give you a call back on the number that you're calling from, because it's starting to make a little robotic sound, and we'll see if that helps at all. And again, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for the technical difficulties, but we are. You know what? I can't call him back. I forgot about that. So I guess we're just gonna have to work through it, because his phone won't accept anonymous calls. So let me see if I can make some adjustments on this end without calling you back. Okay, Sheldon, go ahead.
Yeah, am I okay?
Yeah, that actually sounds a little better. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to add that people go to Lucas's website, I know you know who he is, rabbithole2.com, there were four asteroids that hit the Earth last year, and the mainstream media buried it. So these objects are coming in. And I also wanted to add, I think the reason they shut down the space shuttle program is because they know that these coastlines are going to be flooded soon. Now, whether it comes from Planet X or an asteroid hitting the ocean or whatever, I think they know that the disasters are coming.
Yeah, I mean, the lies, you know, as President Nixon once said, it's not the crime that incriminates them, it's the cover-up. And there are so many cover-up lies that are going on. It's just incredible. So we know that these cover-up lies are another factor that indicates that this object is coming in. But we have to give people hope. If you recognize, and each day I walk with the presence of God in my mind, and it's easy to forget because we all get distracted, our minds get distracted onto our everyday activities, such as cleaning the house, mowing the lawn, going to work, and all this other stuff. In our lives, our minds are very busy. But after you keep on practicing, just feeling the presence of God, being aware that God is with you as you're driving. You don't have to talk to him as you're doing your daily activities. Just be aware that he's your silent, invisible companion. And as a result, God promises that he will, now you have become his child. You have recognized him, and he has taken you under his wing, so to speak, and he's going to protect you from all of these disasters. At the same time, there are physical things we can do to protect ourselves, and I'd like to talk about that next chance we get. Go ahead, Sheldon. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, John's very right. God will supernaturally protect you when the earth disasters get severe enough, if you're willing to turn to him.
Yeah, and take a look at the roof now. Kevlar. There are ways we should be protecting our roof, just like the government's protecting their roofs. I see roofs getting blown off of houses every day on the Weather Channel. It's horrible. Once the roof gets blown off, the rain comes in and the house is destroyed. So we have to find ways to protect the roof, not only from the winds, but from the pounding, softball-sized and baseball-sized hailstones that are coming and are becoming more frequent. Now, most of us have not experienced these hailstones, but we will pretty soon because it's going to become more commonplace to have massive hailstorms. I've seen cars on the Weather Channel smashed. People videotaping from inside their cars screaming that these hailstones are coming down, smashing their windows, smashing the car, totaling the car with the victims inside of it. You know, it's horrible. So there are ways to protect it. If you take like that chicken wire or some heavy chicken wire and cover the top of the car, that chicken wire will break up if it's heavy enough, gauge. It'll catch the stones and sort of slice them up and break their impact. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Well, that's a great topic you're on there. We have another researcher friend out there. Her name is Ann Morrison. She attended a CERT training seminar in St. Louis, Missouri, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and she was told by a young NOAA scientist in the hallway, just wait until people start seeing hurricanes forming over dry land. Well, we just had a Category 2, Category 3, Category 4 hurricane force winds pound the western U.S. out here. This is something that's going to be seen more more frequently as Planet X gets closer. Actually, a lot of people forget this, but there was a hurricane that covered our entire North American continent about 2 or 3 years ago.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I've seen them on the Weather Channel. So you say Ann Morrison was at a National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration expect major hurricanes on land.
It was one of those CERT training things.
Mm-hmm.
And she was told by a young NOAA scientist in the hallway, wait until people start seeing these hurricanes forming over land. And he quickly shut up and wouldn't answer any more follow-up questions by Ann Morrison on that.
See, these government scientists know about it, and some other astronomers have been silenced too, like Dr.
Well, that's another thing. That's another thing. The USGS is underreporting these earthquakes. They're underreporting the daily ultraviolet index we're getting from the sun.
Oh yeah, I mean the U.S. Geological Survey is such a joke. I mean, this is more evidence that the cover-up, like Nixon said, it's not the crime that incriminates them, it's the cover-up that proves that they really are committed a crime. Well, the crime is in lying about this. These USGS has been underreporting, as you say. They've even changed the magnitude scale of earthquakes such that they seem far less severe than they actually are. And they've done this for a number of decades. They've even gone from the Richter scale, which was used historically, to what's called the modified Mercalli scale, which is a joke. I mean, it's an insult to anybody's intelligence. If you look at the modified Mercalli scale, the definition of it is, well, if we see somebody's furniture moved a little bit, you know, that adds to, that gives it so many points in calculating the magnitude. Or, you know, something in the house moved or whatever. Well, what if the earthquake occurred in an area where there were no houses? And how do you subjectively tell somebody, well, the earth furniture moved a certain amount? It's just a joke. It's they must think we're really stupid. It's just that we don't know. We're not told how ridiculous these scales are. So the USGS is lying. In fact, I have a friend, a guy I know. He's former military. And, you know, the reason I know these people, and Sheldon knows these people, is because we put out this information and we begin to meet people. People come to us with this information, just like they did with Mark Hazelwood. He wrote a book about Planet X. He was deceived by the power elite into believing that it would come in at 2003. Why? Because, again, if we lie to you and tell you it's coming in, just like YU-55 and LNN, and it doesn't come in, then everybody becomes skeptical about it.
Well, John?
That's what they did with Mark Hazelwood, but I was saying, just saying that Mark drew a lot of friends, a lot of contacts, military, government people, astronomers started to come to him with information, and that's what happens to Sheldon and I. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, forget it. I wasn't. What I was going to say isn't right anyway. So go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, okay. So that's how we know. Now this guy I know, he came to me with this information. He's former military. He was in the Gulf War, the first Persian Gulf War in 1991, and he's got contacts in the government, and he has a friend who is a USGS geologist, and this geologist told him, get this now, 5 years ago. And he told me over the phone that this geologist from the U.S. Geological Survey told him that they, the government geologists, expect land masses to arise out of the Gulf of Mexico. And then what happens in 2010? We have this Gulf oil spill occurring. And I immediately put those facts together and realized that the Gulf oil spill was a big cover-up scam.
It's a cover-up to conceal the earth changes is what it is.
Right. See, there's buckling under the seabed of the Gulf of Mexico. And people's lives have been threatened. This is another whole subject. We could talk for hours on this.
You know what, John? Hold that thought, because we've got an Oracle break coming up, ladies and gentlemen. John DiNardo and Sheldon Day. And the websites are, the website is thelightofdayradio.com. And if you're listening to on the truthfrequencyradio.com stream, we will keep it going for the next half hour. And then for the final hour of the show, Donnie Gilson will be joining us of 32 Degrees of Insanity. So be sure to stick around for that. Don't touch that dial.
Of cutting edge talk radio online worldwide.
Given in the book of Daniel chapter 7 as the kingdom of God, our Savior, God who saves us. So there's a lot of symbolism there. It's basically what it's saying. He's saying is when you see the Antichrist ruling, and this man is going to be possessed by demonic spirits, a demonic spirit known as Satan. Now, you might say, well, that's kind of, that's a Christian take on it. But wait a minute.
Well, I think most of our leaders are possessed.
The world is telling us right now. The world is telling us, Harry Potter, demons, worship the devil.
Well, I think most of our leaders are possessed by Satan. I mean, look at what they do.
Yeah, I mean, even if a person says, oh, I don't believe in all that stuff, that's metaphysical mumbo-jumbo. But wait a minute. Even if we don't believe it, these power elite actually believe it. If you go to their landmark book, Morals and Dogma, by Albert Pike, written in the late 1800s, he states in his book, we worship Lucifer as God. And, of course, all the other followers of these Freemasons, George Herbert Walker Bush, his son George W. Bush, their grandfather Prescott Bush, and the John Kerry family, and et cetera, all these people in Skull and Bones that are so high up in government, became CIA directors, government, Department of Defense leaders, presidents of the United States. These Skull and Bones, every one of them worshipped Lucifer. They were Freemasons under the doctrines of Albert Pike, where they actually worshipped Lucifer. In fact, President George Herbert Walker Bush, one of the most evil men who ever lived, was answered one time when they said, are you born again? And he says, Are you a Christian? Are you a Christian? He said, well, if you mean born again, yes. Well, he was born again into the brotherhood of Satan, and that's what they do in their secret ceremonies.
But
they're
there's a big
buried in a casket, and they're born again.
But there's a big difference between Lucifer and Satan, isn't there? I mean,
there is. Well, the difference is the same being. Lucifer is the name that was given to this chief angel when he before he had rebelled against God. Lucifer meaning the light, lucid meaning light, the light bearer. But then when he rebelled, he became the adversary, and Satan in Hebrew means adversary of God. So we call him the adversary because he's a renegade, he's an outcast, he's a criminal against God, whereas those who worship him would never call him Satan because that would be insulting to their God. So they still call him Lucifer.
I guess what I'm a bit confused about is you hear the idea that he rebelled against God because he was jealous because God loved us. And God had given us free will, and the angels didn't have free will. But
that's right.
If that's the case, then how did he have the free will to rebel?
It doesn't say, I don't believe the Bible. I have never seen anything in the Bible that said angels do not have free will.
Okay.
They do have free will. They're messengers of God. And they are, that's the difference. We have the free will, but is it really free will? And there's a lot of contention about that. Look, I was created with a certain predilection, a certain inclination to revere some divine creator. And you were too, and maybe some other people don't. Other people are very skeptical about that. They were just born that way. So is it, or do we really have the free will, or did God make some of us? Well, in the scriptures it says, those whom he foreknew, he created before the foundation of the world. He foreknew them to be of believing spirit. So everybody has a different type of spirit. Everybody was created differently, like a potter would create pottery. Some of it's defective, some of it's perfect. None of us are perfect. We're all imperfect, but that's not a good analogy. But the point is, we all have a different spirit. Some have the capability to believe. Others were born with the capability to be non-believers.
That's interesting.
So anyway, the angels had free will, and one third of them rebelled and actually came to Earth. And I've seen so many proofs of this that they actually mated with women, and they created these monstrous giants that actually ruled. We have scientific evidence that they existed thousands of years ago.
Right. Well, that begs the question then, who were these angels? Because they must have been physical beings if they mated with women.
But the Council of Nicaea said that you were a heretic if you believed that angels could be in any way, shape, or form physical.
Who says that? Where does
It was right after the Council of Nicaea. It was around 400 A.D., and they classified it as heretical to believe.
That's what men said. But if you read the scriptures, remember in the book, the four Gospels, where it talks about the crucifixion of Christ, and he was laid in the tomb. And what happens? The women came, and they went to look in to bring spices to the tomb, and they saw these men. There was glowing men in white, and they were angels. Remember, they were men. And when the Roman soldiers saw these men, they fainted in fear, out of fear. That's all in the scriptures. And then if you go back to the Old Testament, let's look for further reinforcement of that. You go to the book of Genesis, chapter 29, I believe. 19. Chapter 19 talks about Sodom and Gomorrah, where these angels came to rescue Lot from Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right.
And these men were so beautiful that all the other homosexual men in the community wanted to rape them. And the angels stopped them by blinding them all. But
now, didn't Lot realize while he was sitting in the tent that he was actually standing before God, that it was God that came down in human form?
The angels came. I know there were two. Was it two angels or three angels?
There were three, and two went into the city, and one stayed behind. And Lot fed him, and they talked for all night, and so on and so forth. Then he realized at the end of it, at least from what I remember, I could be mistaken, but he realized at the end of it that he was actually speaking to the God.
It could be, because there are cases where, you know, the Lord Jesus Christ came to, I can't remember them all in the Bible, but yeah, that's very possible. But you see, angels can manifest. We see evidence of that. And maybe God gave them the ability to do so. They were forbidden to do it, but God gave them the ability. But the point is, we do know that these monstrous giants were born. And there's so much evidence that they were created by these, the mating of these angels with women. It's in the Book of Enoch. It's a very...
Oh, that's a fascinating read. Yeah, I completely agree.
So don't we expect the same thing to be something similar to be happening today?
Hold that thought. Let me take us out of the Oracle stream. TruthFrequencyRadio.com, ladies and gentlemen. And the website is actually thelightofdayradioshow.com. So check that out real quick. We'll be right back for those of you tuning in on the Truth Frequency stream. We'll keep it going for you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment with Sheldon Day and John DiNardo. TheLightOfDayRadioShow.com. And in the final hour, we'll be joined by Donnie Gilson, 32 Degrees of Insanity. And he's got some updates on tracking Nibiru. Kind of goes hand in hand with what we've been talking about for the past 2 hours. And John, let me ask you this. Where can people tune into the radio show?
Oh, my radio program, it's on shortwave. It used to be on internet and shortwave. Now it's just on shortwave. I don't know if the people can remember these frequencies. It's 3.215 and 5050. So I'll just say, to make it simple, 3215 and 5050. Those are the two frequencies simultaneously broadcasting at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturdays.
That's WWCR out of Nashville.
Yeah. And also on 9265. I know it's hard to remember all these numbers, but maybe they can write them down. 9265 on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern.
And can they find that information at thelightofdayradioshow.com?
It'll probably get put up there pretty soon.
Okay, excellent.
And all my broadcasts are also on. Sheldon was nice enough to put them on his webpage, his Planet X webpage. So you can get the audios if you just go to thelightofdayradioshow.com. That's a long name. And click on the big Planet X logo at the top. That'll take you to the Nothing But Planet X page. And all of my audio clips are there. I don't talk very much. I let the drama have dramas with music in the background to make it very fascinating and entertaining. And you can click on a lot of those broadcasts, Planet X broadcasts.
Yeah, John?
Yeah.
John, just to clarify for the audience, what's going on here is I used to have my own radio show called The Light of Day Radio Show, and I became friends here with John DiNardo, and I decided to co-allocate space for him on my website so he can get his Planet X audio dramas out to the public, and they're all listed there on the Planet X subpage.
Oh, excellent. And you have a Planet X, is that the only website that you have, Sheldon, or is there another one?
That's the only one that me and
that's the one? Okay.
John have, yeah.
You know, we have to reach people, and that's what I've been trying to do, going through broadcasters like you. But we've got to give people encouragement. Like, first of all, teach them how to physically protect themselves from the windstorms, from the hailstorms. Again, you can take, be imaginative. You can go to Home Depot and find things that can help you to protect your home. We have to start doing it soon because we have to have a place to live, and we've got to protect our roof. So if you take, like, heavy-gauge chicken wire, or there's something cool like a metal mesh that's used for making stucco. What it does is for stucco walls, it holds the cement together. It's like a metal mesh. It's also used in flooring where you put down cement on a floor, and it holds it together. It's a metal mesh. That might be another way to cover your car, but I don't know if it's too heavy or not. Whereas heavy-gauge chicken wire, if you can find heavy enough gauge, you can mount it to the top of your car, covering the entire roof and the hood of the car and the rear trunk area. so that when this hail comes crashing down, a lot of it will be, the impact will be broken by the wire. Just think about it. I mean, I've thought about different ways to do it, but this is probably the simplest way, and it would, the wind would not catch it because it has a lot of holes in it. Now, speaking of wind, that kind of chicken wire would all, might also be effective on your roof, because it would break the impact of the massive hailstones that are coming down. They're going to be inundating every area of the country very soon. It'll break the impact of these hailstones on your roof so that your roof won't be smashed to bits. At the same time, it may break the force of the wind. I don't know. If you have an object, even with lots of holes and perforations like chicken wire or steel mesh on your roof, it may be enough to break the impact of the wind so that it doesn't rip the roof off of your house. Also, I spent, I got a new roof put on my house, and I was lucky because you can put one layer of new shingles on top of an old layer. You know, you just can't put three layers on. But maybe if the nails are long enough, maybe you can. The idea is to get big enough shingles, strong, high wind-resistant shingles, which is what I did. And I had them put on. I found the best roofer. And again, make sure that the guy does not use staples. See, I'm getting into little details, but when it comes to the integrity of your house, it's not a little detail. It's a major concern.
Yeah, absolutely. People should get some kind of water filtration system, learn how to grow food, stock up on storable food as well, so on and so forth. People need to be prepared. At the very least, you're prepared. If nothing happens, you're still prepared for something.
Hey, Chris?
Yes.
I was going to add, but what me and John do is we fill up empty 1 gallon plastic jugs, whether they're empty milk containers or hydrogen peroxide bottles. Just, you know, it's tap water, but it'll help keep you alive when these solar blasts start taking down our power grids.
Oh, definitely, right. Definitely. I had a bunch of Ozarka bottles, 5 gallon bottles that we were storing water in. And we had, I don't know, 30 or 40 of them, but we'd always filter it with the Pure Effect filter that you can get right on our website. Click on the banner, takes you right to Pure Effect filters, anti-radiation filters, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. So, guys, about 4 minutes left. Sheldon, what would you like to leave the audience with?
Well, I would just tell people to get their priorities in order. And, you know, people are always focused on a date. When's this thing going to get here? Pinpointing, trying to figure out a date will just drive you crazy. I would just say to get prepared. Spiritually is probably the most important thing. There's some people that don't want to be prepared. There's one guy out there that told Professor McCanny that he doesn't want to get prepared. He'll just put an X on his roof and say, strike here when it comes. So it's just up to you whether, you know, psychologically you want to get prepared for the disasters that are coming.
And those are the kind of people who live through it. They deny it, but then they live through it, and then they want to kill you to take your last can of beans or your last can of sardines. Those are the kind of guys that you got to watch out for, the non-survivalists. They're the most dangerous people in the country, and there are a lot of them.
Well, just look at what happens on Black Friday. That's over plastic junk. Just imagine if there was a disaster and people were looking for food and water.
That is an excellent illustration. I mean, that just shows you that people will actually kill you. Your nicest neighbor will kill you if he and his family are starving. So what you have to do is protect your windows. Now, we could talk more about window protection. First of all, I got this Impact Unbreakable Glass Windows by Gorell, G-O-R-E-L-L. It's two layers of, you know, glass with a Pittsburgh plate glass, PPG, plastic sheet in between, molded right in between, and you can't even see it. It looks like two layers of glass with air in between, but it's really plastic. And you could hit that thing with a 2x4 or a baseball bat. You'll break the glass, but you will not get through that window. Okay. That's
well, I'd also
I
like
done.
To add. Go ahead, John.
No, go ahead, Sheldon.
Well, I was going to say, if you live near the coastlines, what people could do is buy a raft. I mean, something as simple as that. These Canary Islands are really been picking up with activity. 11,000 earthquakes since the middle of July. And, you know, the BBC and the Discovery Channel have been conditioning us to get prepared for a mega tsunami event like that.
Oh, they have been. They've been running that mega tsunami documentary over and over, trying to warn us about it. And you're absolutely right. That's a very good point. What will we do in a tsunami? We saw films of that tsunami that hit in Asia, right, in the Indian Ocean back in 2004. People were just floating around, grabbing onto whatever they could. And a friend of mine said, well, why don't we have something like the, you know, like a floating bubble or a ball that you can get inside of it? And, you know, somehow it might have a strut or an axle in the center of it that would always right itself, so it would always be vertical. You've seen those toys, right, where there's like a globe, plastic globe, and inside of it there's something that always remains vertical, doesn't topple over no matter how the ball itself turns. Well, something like that, a person could save their life in that kind of an object. I mean, on a raft, you wouldn't have much hope. You'd have more hope on a raft, but you still need to get hit by a lot of debris, and you could be easily capsized. But with a ball or some kind of an object, even some kind of a suit that you can float in, like, did you ever see the Michelin Man? Maybe a suit, something like that, where you could just float, at least to save your life. People can have these things. That's what we have to think about.
Yes, definitely. John, we really appreciate it. We've got the break coming up in 10 seconds, but we really appreciate you joining the broadcast this evening.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Take care. And we'll see you on...
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extra...